If your food media diet is fueled by HRN, become a monthly donor today. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Well, well, welcome to Life is a Banquet with your hosts, me, Stefan Urkel. I was like, who is that? And then I remembered. It's hot Steve Urkel.
It's hot, just, sophisticated Urkel.
Which is just Steve Urkel without his glasses on and with normal pants at his normal waist.
Right, because in the 1980s and 90s, anybody with glasses was automatically unfuckable. But as soon as you take the glasses off, voila! Anyway, who are you?
I don't know.
I know, it's hard to know. I do put you on the spot each week. And secondly, these days, who are any of us really? Am I right, everyone?
Yeah. I guess I could say that I'm Michelle Pfeiffer's character in The Witches of Eastwick when she still has the glasses on. Or, wait, when she's Catwoman, when she wears the glasses in Catwoman, before she turns into Catwoman. That's who I am.
That's amazing. And that probably is the best example of what we're talking about ever. First of all, Michelle Pfeiffer, the planet's most attractive human being, is somehow made to look like this dowdy.
If you're into skinny white ladies.
Yes, exactly. If you like skinny white ladies with big mouths and big eyes, then she's your gal. But really, very interesting in how they decided to make her look so disgusting in her large hanging clothing and her frizzy hair. I think she still looked hot.
I just rewatched The Mirror Has Two Faces, which is a truly, truly terrible, terrible movie.
I don't know that movie. What, who and what and when?
Oh, you don't know this movie?
No. I've heard of it, but I really don't know much about it.
It's Barbra Streisand.
Oh, and Jeff Bridges?
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure Babs directed it.
Right.
And the premise is that Jeff Bridges gets so distracted when he sleeps with, like, beautiful women that he decides to put an ad out for a woman who he just wants to have a companionship marriage with, like a platonic marriage, because then he's like, he can have all the benefits without going crazy. And so he basically is like, give me, you know, an ugly person. And so Barbra Streisand's sister puts her up for it. And, you know, in this,
she's like, hey, you're ugly
movie, she's wearing like glasses. She's wearing like a ton of skirts and sweaters to make herself look ugly. Right. And then of course they do get married. Spoilers alert for this movie, you guys, that came out 40,000 years ago. And sucks. But, she does marry him, even though she doesn't really think it's a good idea, but she's like, well, who else is going to marry me?
Sure. No one.
We all feel that. So, so then naturally she realizes things aren't going to work out. So she like leaves him. Or she tries to seduce him and he locks himself in the bathroom. She leaves him, you know, loses weight, gets contacts, dyes her hair blonde, shows back up, and all of a sudden he's attracted to her and he's pissed off. And so then she leaves him, and then he realizes the error of his ways, and he and her have a very, very long dance sequence in the street during the credits that made me feel uncomfortable.
Well, I must say that I love, love, love Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, but he's super annoying in it. Like, he's not even, like, lovable in it. His voice is annoying.
He does have a bit of an annoying tone to his voice.
Lauren Bacall is in it, and I love her.
Oh, yeah.
And she actually is great in it because she's perfect.
What can't she do?
Pierce Brosnan, star of Mrs. Doubtfire, is also in it.
Defamed star of Mrs. Doubtfire that almost meets an untimely death due to a shrimp allergy. Please reference the unpublished article that we wrote for Lenny Letter about Mrs. Doubtfire for Father's Day, which we should really try to put somewhere. Nicole and I and our friend Jenny and our friend Sarah worked on an essay that we pitched to Lenny Letter like years ago. And it was supposed to be about Father's Day recipes. And for some reason, we decided to just detail the entire story of the movie Mrs. Doubtfire. And they were like, what is this trash?
No, I decided we should do it from the perspective of the youngest daughter with the slant that actually Robin Williams is severely mentally ill.
Right.
Which is now since kind of been done. in other ways. But
we did. It's like those trailers with the scary music. Like when you do What About, have you seen the one with What About Bob to like terrifying music?
No, but What About Bob is kind of scary anyway.
100%. As the daughter of a therapist, I can tell you with 100% certainty right now here on this very podcast that if one of my mother's patients was to ever follow us on vacation, I would not go on to a sailboat with them.
Right. It's like a comedy version of Cape Fear. It is.
He might as well have been clinging to the bottom of the car. Cape Fear is probably the worst use of a fake accent I've ever heard in any movie ever. I don't know how Robert De Niro was ever allowed to act again after that movie.
I don't remember him having an accent, but I do remember really liking that movie and the original and the Simpsons version of Cape Fear.
Oh, of course, when Sideshow Bob clings to the bottom of the car. That's an amazing one. But yeah, Robert De Niro is like, well, I am a Southern man, and I'm here to kill your family. I'm a classic prison. It's like, excuse me, sir. This is not good. What are you doing? Didn't you not practice? It's like he just tried for the first time on the first day of shooting.
Oh my God. Well, that just happens. That's what happens when you get so famous, nobody can say no to you anymore.
Well, I do declare I am here to kill your family. Nick Nolte. And Nick Nolte is like, I'm drunk. It's a wild time.
And Juliette Lewis is like, I'm doing the time where I'm acting crazy in every movie. It's great.
It is great. So speaking of movies, I'm assuming you must have something to say about your boyfriend, Ben Affleck.
Yeah, my ex-boyfriend, Ben Affleck, who is now dating a slightly more famous person. So there's a couple of updates. One was sent in to us. This is a tip sent in by a friend of the pod, Mike Salah.
Oh my God, hot tip. We have a tip line, a Ben Affleck tip line now at the show.
It's not really a hot tip, but it's more like a hilarious meme. But Ben Affleck is wearing like some kind of rainbow pride shirt that says love is love. And the caption said, serious actor Ben Affleck, like loves gay rights or something. It was really...
Oh, that's really funny. It would have been funny if he was wearing that shirt when he was crunching the fucking picture of Ana de Armas and or the cutout of her into the garbage.
Well, he wasn't doing it himself. A servant was doing it.
Oh, a servant crunched it in.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that is a horse of a different color, but still very funny.
Yes. And then another thing that I read on the internet is that Jennifer Lopez was recently interviewed by Hoda Kotb of the Today Show or whatever. And so Jennifer was on there because she has a new single out or something. Mm-hmm. And Hoda was like, oh, are you happy in your new relish? Because the photo, the paparazzi photographs make it seem like you are very happy. And Jennifer Lopez was like, well, the song is out and I am very happy that the song is out. Basically just like completely avoided the question. And then Hoda was like, do you know who you're talking to? Or no, she was like, you know who you're talking to, right? Like they're friends or whatever.
Yeah.
And Jennifer was like, yeah, you can call me. You have my number.
Ooh, wow, burn. Embarrassing for Hoda. You know, I saw Hoda Kotb, and I don't know if this is breaking some kind of confidentiality rule, although I wasn't the doctor, but when I was going to get a mammogram, because I had thought I had a lump in my breast, which turned out to be fine, everyone. And she was there, and she had openly spoken about having terrible breast cancer. And it scared me to see her in the doctor's office, actually.
Well, you have to get checkups every year.
I know, but for some reason it's just because I was already so scared, and then since she has had such a public, you know, experience with breast cancer, I was like, took it as a bad omen.
You weren't scared for Hoda, you were scared for yourself.
Exactly. No, I mean she's fine, she's rich, I have nothing. So if I had breast cancer, I would basically, you know,
they would have to bury you in a pauper's grave.
They would tell me to go die and throw me in a garbage bag into the Hudson River with you, sick woman. That's America. Look, so now let's just make a very simple transition.
No, wait, there's more Ben Affleck.
Oh, there's more. I'm sorry. I didn't know that. I thought I had to quickly move away after my awkward breast cancer story.
Yeah, let's take it back to the thing people want to hear about. Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck.
So This is probably not true, so don't get all excited. But okay. It says on the internet that Jennifer Lopez.
Love Hewitt.
Whatever the fuck her name is house hunting with Ben Affleck. Now, that could just mean that he's coming with her to, like, mansplain wainscoting to her or something.
He's like, you don't want to have a storm drain on the left side of the house because it's going to just run downhill.
The implication is that they're house hunting together, which it seems a little fast to me, but they are, like, old. So I guess.
Exactly. When you're that elderly, it's you want to get it done with. There's no time to waste.
They're staring into the void. So, like, they have 100%. To, like, get this.
Also, he's a severe alcoholic, allegedly, and his liver is probably going to quit at any day now.
That is true. She needs to get in that will.
Exactly. Yes. It's the will. She's a black widow.
They can't wait for the 7 years common law marriage. They're going to have to get married ASAP. But I just thought it was funny because they're like, they're looking for a house together. And I was like, well, first of all, number one, why do celebrities move so much?
I know. That is such an interesting point. Why? Just because they can? It's so annoying to move no matter who you are. They move all. They're always moving.
Well, they don't have to. It's not annoying for them to move. People do everything for them.
I know, but still, it's like, your home, if you, like, settle into a home, maybe, like, nowhere ever really feels like home for them.
Well, that's the other thing. Because I'm like, just imagine, like, being single and having, you know, she has the twins or whatever. There's only two kids, right? You're in this, like, 60-room mansion. Like, it just feels like, I mean, of course, many of the rooms will be filled with servants. But, like,
sure.
It just seems, like, lonely. Like, I live currently in a 3-bedroom mansion. And it's like,
oh, well.
It's a little bit too much house for just me, you know?
I mean, imagine how she must feel. But it still begs the question, why do they move around so much? Celebrities listening, please call into the tip line. Let us know why you can't stay in one place. Why are you so anxious to just get out and move around? We want to know.
I remember also specifically the real Jennifer Aniston was on Ellen one time and she was making fun of Ellen because Ellen moves every year, every single year.
What?
And she's a New Yorker who's poor like us.
What on earth? Makes no sense. Makes no sense. And that's why I'm going to take a sip of my drink, which is the Bukowski special. I am having a vodka and water with no ice.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Why?
Because I had a bit of a hard day.
But why? Why no ice?
There was... none made. I had to move a bunch of stuff out of my freezer.
Oh, your servants didn't make any.
My servants in the bottom quarters of my home had not prepared the ice, and that's why I have sent them all to walk the plank.
Yeah. But I have one more thing to talk about before we move on to our topic.
Sure.
Which is, I went to St. Louis this weekend for my sister's surprise birthday party.
Right.
And I just want to say, Shannon, love you very much, but I already had a request off work for her initial real birthday. July 6th. Then her friends are like, we're throwing her a surprise party. And I had to request off work for that. Cause I work in the restaurant industry. So if you do stuff on the weekends, I'm basically losing money to attend.
Totally.
And then, then she's also going to Austin at the end of this month. So she's having a full month of birthday celebration. And I just think that's fine. Whatever.
Wow.
I'm not bitter, but I did go to St. Louis in an orange Jetta that I rented, which was very cute.
It's very sexy.
Orange is not very cute for me, but whatever.
Well, it is your favorite color.
Yeah, it is. But so I was in, you know, the party was in someone's house in their backyard. So I spent the entire evening in a backyard.
Wow.
And come to find out the next day, actually it took 48 hours for this to show up, but I have hundreds of mosquito bites on my ankles.
Really?
Hundreds of them.
Maybe they're flea bites.
No, because my sister has the same thing. And I saw some mosquitoes. I was like, oh, they're kind of biting me. But like I put off on.
Ugh, how awful. Maybe you have the chicken pox on your ankles only.
No, it's just.
It's mosquitoes.
I've never had this many mosquito bites. So I'm worried I have West Nile now. It also looks really bad. Like I have a crazy rash all over my ankle. And my sister was like, oh, the exact same thing happened to me.
Oh,
and
I
was
my Lord. Really?
So, yeah. If you go to St. Louis, cover yourself in bug spray.
That's a great tip.
It's a gateway to the West. You got to cover yourself up.
I just got back from my own Midwestern vacation in which, I don't know if you remember, but I saw you two times.
You saw me two times, yeah.
And it was so much fun. I went all the way to Sheboygan, Wisconsin, where I visited former co-host of this podcast, Bretton Scott. Mm-hmm. And he showed me a real good time. We went to Schwartz's Supper Club. And folks, I got to say something about Wisconsin. It's my favorite state, aside from New York, of course. But Wisconsin is really like its own country. They have very specific traditions. They eat a lot of fried, delicious things. They like pickles, which I very much appreciate and respect. There's a lot of vintage things and mid-century things. And I don't know. I would move there.
Because let's move there, but it's really cold in the winter. We could summer there.
New York, you know, people say like it's cold in the winter. New York is cold in the winter. Plus, because the world is burning to a crisp, nowhere is going to be that cold in the winter pretty soon.
I mean, by the time climate change forces migration, we'll most likely be in a home or dead.
But I think that I could see myself living in Wisconsin, because one of the things that I realized from my road trip is that I am planet Earth's last single person. And I think it's because I live in New York and maybe I need to move to the Midwest.
No, it's bad here. But plus everyone here is, well, I don't want to sound shallow, but the thing about Wisconsin is that it is colder than New York City. Like, it's like if you were to move to Buffalo, that's, it's Canada almost.
Right. But the people are warmer. I can't stand just looking at myself in the mirror anymore. I need human contact.
Yeah. I think what you should do is try to create like a lifetime movie scenario for yourself where you fish out a water story, you move to a small town in Wisconsin, and in, like, just like in the Lifetime movie, there's like a couple of really hot dudes there that for some reason are single and unmarried, even though you're all in your 40s.
Exactly.
And then you guys form a love triangle, and there's probably, you probably start to open your own cupcake business, I think is probably what you're going to have to do.
Sure. People like cupcakes. That's fine. I don't give a shit. I'll make a cupcake. I'll make dozens of cupcakes.
Trouble with your business and like a high powered New York friend will have to come in. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to work out the details. But
this
then,
is the plot. 100%. Actually, funny that you should mention this, because my friend Alex, who I went to go visit in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, when I was visiting her last time in Italy, we watched a Lifetime movie about this exact thing. A single woman who moved into a fixer-upper house. And, of course, the hot carpenter started boning her.
Yeah.
Then there was some kind of, like, really not a big deal conflict. She freaked out because she was like, I'm afraid to get close to anyone again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which no one says ever. That is a non thing that happens.
Most men that I meet do say that.
Men often say it, but it's not real. You know, that's code for I hate you, go die.
No, my sister loves Lifetime Christmas movies, and so there's an algorithm thing that just puts plots together for you or something like that. So it's like
a
woman moves back to her hometown where her high school sweetheart is still single. But here's the thing, you guys, I can tell you this. If you move back to your hometown in your 40s, there are no hot single dudes left.
That's true.
They could be divorced. But that, for me, is fine. But in Lifetime, they act as if these people have never even, or if they can't get divorced. They can be widowed. But they can't.
They're always widowed. They're always widowed in the Lifetime movies. They were perfect. And yet so like eager to jump back at it. Like, they're like, oh, I don't know if I can, but they will. It's like there's no grieving, really.
Yeah.
It's absurd. And they're so hot. It's like,
she's like Sleeping with the Enemy, where Julia Roberts escapes her wealthy, abusive husband and then moves in right next door to an eligible hottie who happens to live in a huge house by himself and has no girlfriend. Not realistic.
No, and this is the problem with life. And as much as I love you movies, you are doing no one a service in being like you are. So quit it.
Yeah.
Stop
Sleeping
it.
With the Enemy, that classic rom-com.
Yes.
Stop setting unrealistic expectations.
Oh, Lord. Well, before we start, since we're talking about movies, I just want to make one recommendation, because I got through this epic road trip with three books that I really love. One of them is Mr. Know-It-All, the John Waters memoir, which I started listening to after my friend Amanda recommended it to me after listening to our John Waters episode.
Thanks for listening, Amanda.
Thank you, Amanda. So it's so good. I loved it. And then I listened to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the book, which I have to say, for anyone who liked the movie and likes movies in general, like is interested in film, really such a wonderful book to listen to because it's super informative and it has so much like film nerd shit in it. It's just like, if you're a film nerd, you're going to get really hard for this movie, this book. And then I just, as I told you yesterday, started listening to Pictures at a Revolution, which this is extremely inside baseball. But if you like this kind of stuff, it's about the five movies that were nominated for Best Picture in 1968. But it is so fucking fun and so full of film history. And so I just wanted to drop those recs before.
Yeah. And in case you're wondering why they picked such a specific year, it's because that movie's like basically fundamentally changed the way movies were made. Right. Those movies did.
Yeah. And it talks a lot about the changing like of the MPAA rating system and the moves from color to black and white and like the move away from like studio pictures. But it's so cool because it talks about every single little facet of interesting filmmaking. And it's very, very cool. So highly, highly, highly recommend that book if you're into movies.
Yeah. And then tune into our movie podcast that we're going to start someday.
We should.
We'll talk more detail about this.
I really can't wait. Look, folks, if you want us to start a movie podcast and just stop talking about movies on this food podcast, then please. Let us know, because otherwise we're going to change the game here and HRN is going to have to become a movie network.
Yeah. Haters, the people who listen, who hate listen to us. Mm-hmm. You guys, now's your time to shine.
Exactly. All right. Well, our topic this week, because Nicole and I went to one of the most fun old school places in Indiana and we were talking about how much we love old school restaurants, is old school restaurants.
Yes. Old school restaurants. Although mine sort of took a different turn because my initial plan was to do St. Elmo, which is the oldest steakhouse in Indianapolis, where we went.
Which was fun and has very spicy cocktail sauce. Although if you're someone who likes spicy food and like, you know, horseradish and things like that, you may not think it's that spicy.
It's
which
not
I
that
did
spicy.
Not.
Unless you're putting like a whole fistful of it in your mouth, which I could imagine some people doing.
Yeah, I liked it.
If you're like a tourist in Indiana for some reason. The other, so this history of St. Elmo is pretty interesting, but also like not that interesting. So I just wasn't that into telling the story. So then I decided to look up the history of the American Steakhouse. And that is really actually interesting, but I got distracted because what I found in my research is this amazing long review by Ruth Reichel. From 1994, where she reviews, in her opinion, every steakhouse in New York, but not all steakhouses are included. And I had to skip some because otherwise this would take 375 hours.
I love this.
But
so
to start off with, she does actually give us a brief little steakhouse history.
Okay,
which
great.
I will cover.
I'm so excited for this. This is my favorite thing to think about, talk about, eat about. I can't wait.
Okay. So everything is basically ripped from this New York Times article by Ruth. None of this is my own original. I am a copycat and who cares?
Who cares?
So Ruth starts out by saying that, if you are a New Yorker, steak is in your blood, which is something that I actually had never really thought about, but it is true. Like the first steakhouse, the first like American steakhouse was in New York and people really love to eat steak there. I mean, I'm just not a steak person. So that's probably why it never really occurred to me. But yeah. Ruth, this bitch fucking loves steak and I'm worried about her cholesterol because the way she talks about eating steak in 1994 when the health nut craze was going on. I'm
totally
just like,
low
Ruth.
Fat. She was rallying against it. I like steak. Like I like a good steak, like a couple bites of it, but I am not someone that can sit and eat a lot. Like I'm a three bites of steak. I want to go to Keen's, get the porterhouse and split it a bunch with a bunch of people.
Yeah. I am the same way. And honestly, like I could just go to Keen's and not even eat a piece of steak.
Yeah. I'm mostly in it for the sides.
So the original way that basically the way that people used to eat meat, the reason that we started steakhouses is essentially because there was something called a beefsteak, which is, according to Ruth, not an institution, but an event. It began in the middle of the 19th century. And essentially it was just where a bunch of dudes would gather in large halls and with no knives, forks, or napkins, eat massive amounts of meat and wash it down with pitchers of beer. So it's like, it's not like the fucking medieval times. before they even had forks invented. These people just like were like, no, I'm going to eat steak with my hands and just become disgustingly covered with meat. And also, it's not like they wash their clothes that often back then. So like, it's probably like their suits are just like covered in beef. It's like, steak, I just picture those political cartoons with the fat politician.
Like at Tammany Hall. They're all just like covered in steak juice.
Although I will say, I read something recently about how political cartoons are actually fat, you know, they use fat as a negative.
Yeah.
And that's pretty fucked up. So
keep
that in mind, folks. So yeah, pitchers of beer, massive pieces of steak with no knives.
Amazing.
Or forks.
Wow. Napkins? Napkins were available or just ties?
No napkins.
Wow.
According to Ruth. Huh. But things changed when, and this was like a, usually like a political gathering for the most part. There's all these politicians doing this. Tammany Hall is exactly right. We'll talk about that in just a second. Things changed when women could vote and politicians thought it would be nice to have ladies come around to these sorts of situations. And a quote from someone who was telling the history of this beefsteak that Ruth quoted, but I didn't write his name down because I'm bad at my job. But he said, women do not esteem a glutton. And he's being snarky. He's like, women shouldn't come. Not like women are in the right. Because of course it was in the 30s.
Of course.
Or the 20s. But he's like, women do not esteem a glutton. And at an ordinary beefsteak, it's not unusual for a man to do away with 6 pounds of meat and 30 glasses of beer.
What? What are you saying? 6 pounds of beef only? No meat. Cream spinach? No rolls? Just
no rolls?
Straight beef?
No, these bitches are just eating meat. There's nothing else.
That's the hot beef injection. That's where it started. That is the hot beef injection. That's too much beef. Where's the beef in all these gross people's stomachs? That's where.
Well, that's why. Now we know that why they died when they're like 28. I mean, what the fuck, you guys? And 30 glasses of beer, but beer, the kind of beer they were drinking was probably low alcohol, but still.
Even still, I can't drink 30 glasses of anything. I'm trying to drink water so I don't look so old and decrepit, and I can get down like, you know, the recommended eight and no more than that.
One glass per week.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't like to pee.
It's boring to go to the bathroom, especially if you have your shirt tucked in and you have to untuck it and then re-tuck it back in and you have tight pants on. You know what I'm talking about, ladies.
It's boring going to the bathroom.
It really is
boring. It's a very big waste of time. Let's stop doing it right now.
I will. So Ruth is not interested in going into any detail about this. So she just says, soon after this time, shrimp cocktail arrived. And then potatoes, and eventually the modern steakhouse menu evolved. I do encourage you, if you're interested, to just like look up the history of the beefsteak, though. It's pretty interesting.
It's amazing. And disgusting. So cool. And gross and horrible.
So the modern steakhouse evolved probably around the same time that Prohibition ended, I would assume. This is me just assuming. Ruth didn't mention that at all, but I think it makes sense. And beefsteaks fell out of favor. People say that after the fall of Tammany Hall, a political organization that controlled New York and who Boss Tweed used to be really corrupt.
Super
after the fall of Tammany Hall, this beefsteak was never the same. So that's the very, very brief history of the beefsteak and how it and sort of vaguely how it turned into the American Steakhouse, but really there's no information there. Then Ruth moves on to, you know, she had a word limit. She had to move on to reviewing all of the fucking steakhouses in New York in 1994. So she starts off with the Palm, which is, do you know the Palm?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. You do? Okay. There's a couple now, but the original Palm I've been to back in the day, and it's pretty luxe, but not my fave.
She loves the steak at the Palm, and for everyone else's interesting information, the Palm was founded in 1926 in Midtown East. They closed the actual original space in 2015. There are now Palms all over the country, but it's kind of split up amongst families, and there's a lot of fighting. But the original location where Ruth was at for this review is closed. Mm. And the Palm 2, which was across the street, also closed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm sorry to tell you.
R.I.P. I imagine I needed to be consoled. We had to stop recording.
She says that she loves a steak at the Palm because it's consistent. And what she does say in her reviews is that she finds that in most steakhouses, that is not the case. You can't get consistency. So she loves the Palm because it's consistent. But the best steak she's ever had in her entire life was at Pietro's.
I don't know Pietro's.
So Pietro's opened.
Theater district?
Yeah. It opened in 1932 on 3rd Ave and 45th. A lot of these are in that area.
Right. So
the original had an open kitchen, but they moved to 43rd Street in the 80s. And Ruth says that they completely lost all personality when they moved to that location. She also says that when she's at Pietro's, she orders a Caesar because it's the only place that uses eggs, garlic, and real anchovies. I guess in 1994, it was hard to get a legit Caesar salad.
Right.
I thought it was funny, though.
I think that place is kind of like Italian-ish, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Pietro kind of sounds Italian.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
It's Italian. I'm not prude. My husband's Italian.
Ruth also, moving on, Ruth loves Peter Luger, and it's her Bomonti's. I know, but let me try to explain.
Go ahead.
It's her Bomonti's. So she says that Peter Luger has the number one best shrimp cocktail she's ever had in her life.
Okay.
I've never had the shrimp cocktail there, so.
I haven't either.
I don't know. Also, quickly, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, Peter Luger sort of kind of started in 1887 in Williamsburg as Carl Luger's Cafe Billiards and Bowling Alley. It fell into disrepair. Another dude bought it, but it has been continuously operating essentially since 1887, which is pretty tight.
It is. There's a certain cool thing about Peter Luger's for sure. I love an old school restaurant. I just didn't speak to me in the way that like I want an old school restaurant to speak to.
So Ruth loves, so that's her, it's her Bomonti's because she said she just loves the atmosphere. She loves going in there. She loves that there's no menu. She loves all that bullshit. She also says that Peter Luger has meat so good. It is the reason that it's some people's only reason to visit America is the steak at Peter Luger.
That's absurd. And also rude to all kinds of people who are like refugees and like trying to like come to America for a better life. She's just like, no, it's the only reason is for the steak, the $175 steak at Peter Luger.
Well, she says it's some people's only reason to visit America. God. She's saying some people come here just to go to Peter Luger.
Sure. Those people are stupid.
But it was the 90s when it was okay to just like talk shit about anyone that you wanted to.
Right.
She does speak very candidly about how all the other food is disgusting there. So she says that the spinach is slippery, the tomatoes are cottony, the potatoes are greasy.
Wow.
And
rude.
So I sort of thought that Peter Luger, I've only been there once or twice, and I've always had the greasy potatoes and the slippery spinach.
Yeah.
And I've never had the burger there, which many of my friends really do like.
Yes.
But it's only available at lunch. God damn
I've
it.
I've never been there to have the burger either. I've been there one time to have like a full proper dinner, and I was not impressed. And to be honest, I don't like when people are rude to me.
I also don't like it when you have to spend, you know, $400 on your dinner and you have to pay cash because it's cash only.
It's the whole thing. I don't know.
I thought, Peter Luger has just like fallen off because it's been around since 1887. But I found this review in the New York Times by someone else in 1985.
Whoa.
Where they basically say the exact same shit. They're like, the atmosphere great, steak good, everything else disgusting.
Yeah.
So they've just always had shitty sides.
And I find that to be like annoying. Like
He said that he saw another table eating the shrimp cocktail, and he asked the waiter why they hadn't been offered the shrimp cocktail, and the waiter said, "I didn't want to confuse you."
What?
Classic New York shitty service.
Shitty. Not cool. Not into that. Life's too short to get like harassed and belittled at dinner while you're, you know what I mean? I want that kind of treatment, I'll go to a dominatrix.
Exactly. Okay, moving on. Her next steak place that she reviews is Gallagher's. Are you familiar?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Gallagher's has a pretty fun story. They opened as a speakeasy in 1927 on 52nd Street, and it was opened by a Ziegfeld girl named Helen Gallagher.
Hey! She fight a hiccup.
Mm-hmm, yep.
I'm the WB frog.
Thank you for that reminder. So Helen Gallagher was married to
Gallagher the Canadian.
Another guy who was a vaudeville guy. I can't remember his name. Peter Gallagher, star of the OC, I think.
Eyebrows that could walk for miles.
She was married to a vaudeville guy. She's a Ziegfeld girl, but she opened the restaurant with a different dude. Her partner was Jack Solomon, described as simply a gambler. So, and this is described, he was described as a gambler by the restaurant's own website, just so you guys know. So then in 1929, Helen's vaudeville husband dies and she marries her partner, Jack, the gambler, which I think is pretty
Kenny Rogers.
Cool. And then, so they were a speakeasy, but then in 1933, Prohibition ended and they opened Broadway's very own first steakhouse.
Oh.
Which I think is pretty cute.
Very cute.
Okay. So Ruth says that the waiters at Gallagher's are just too nice. Like, it makes you feel like awkward because she actually wants to be a little rough handled, I guess. Okay. Which I actually loves Peter Lager.
Sure.
The thing that Gallagher's is famous for is the visible meat fridge. So they keep all of their meat in a refrigerator, like a big, you know, walk-in thing. And it has windows. So when you're sitting in the dining room, you can actually see the meat in there.
You can see it from the window on the street, too, when you're walking by.
And so according to Ruth, despite the fact that the waiters are so nice, the visible meat fridge lets you know that this is the real thing. she also says she likes that you can pick your own steak, and Ruth says, order a sirloin, and if it's not very good, just order another one, because that's what she did last time and it's fine.
Wow.
Here, this is where I'm interested. She says that they have fabulous steak fries and terrific onion rings. So I am interested in Gallagher's for this reason only.
Totally. That sounds great. I love an onion ring.
Yeah. I just can't imagine like going to 52nd Street.
For an onion ring. I mean, life's too short.
Okay, so moving on. The next restaurant that she talks about is Sparks Steakhouse. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar?
Mm-hmm.
So the original was on East 18th Street, opened in 1966. So not as old as some of these places, but still pretty old.
Yeah.
In 1977, they moved to 46th and 3rd. And they claim, according to Ruth, to have their own secret aging process. She suspects that it is a combination of wet and dry, but very little dry aging. Ruth in 94 was all about the dry age, which I think is pretty interesting because, you know, I don't remember hearing about dry aging until like 2014.
Sure.
But go Ruth. She likes the little funk that you get on that.
I'm glad that you picked this because I really do love Ruth Reichel and I love her writing.
Yeah. So she's, I have a quote from here. She's not super into the Sparks wet and dry. But here she says, take a bite of Spark's excellent meat, which has a moist, almost damp texture and a clean, straightforward flavor that you won't find anywhere else.
Damn.
But she's like, you know what? That's for some people, but I want more dry aging. So it's not her fave.
Yeah.
She wants it to be drier, denser, and more charred. But she eats there all the time, she says.
Wow. She's just like constantly sending it back, like the loyal regular who is always complaining. Of which I
think this
bitch
must eat steak like once a week. So she still eats there all the time, and she adores the wine list, which apparently is they're famous for it. She also likes this little flourish, which I also kind of think is cute, is that they change the tablecloth before dessert.
Oh,
so they'll take off
classy.
Your whole tablecloth and give you a brand new one before dessert comes out.
That's great because who wants to be eating dessert with like a bunch of bloody meat juice and like ketchup on your table? A1 sauce.
Yeah. And like asparagus spears.
Exactly.
if they're in season. The next place that Ruth talks about is Smith and Walensky.
I love Smith and Walensky.
I have never been there.
It's great.
But they opened in 77. So they're their youngest of the bunch here. They're on 3rd Avenue, 49th Street. According to Ruth, these guys have her second best shrimp cocktail she's ever had. Number one is Peter Lueger, just so you remember.
Okay.
The problem with Smith & Walensky for her is that it has a corporate feel. The food, it's like a food factory filled with tourists. And she's annoyed by the wine list, which she says, and I quote, was put together with a lot of money and very little imagination.
It is very corporate and it is very like American Psycho in there, but there's something that I love about it. It's just very like, I don't know. It's a cold kind of place. Like I imagine it as like what it would feel like to be in Chicago at a steakhouse. I've never been Chicago, but that's what I think of it. It's very Gotham. Like, you know, in Batman and the Batman movies, like Gotham, the like kind of hybrid of Chicago and New York. That's what it feels like.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's also in 94, which probably isn't true anymore, although who the hell knows, she said, if the waiter pushes something called a chocolate basket on you, and he will, please pass.
But you've got to try my chocolate basket.
Okay, so the next ones I don't have a ton of information on because they are all closed, but the next one is called Christchella.
Never heard of it.
It's Christ as in our Lord, C-E-L-L-A.
The original Coachella, but featuring Christ only and steak.
It operated from the 30s to the 80s. Ruth went in, or it must have been through the 90s because she goes there in 94. But she complains about the prices. So she's not a fan. There's no menu. And she says the reason there's no menu is because if there was a menu, would lose your appetite because the prices are so high. So in 1994, the shrimp cocktail there was $19.
That's like $70 in today's money.
The hash browns are $9.75, which sounds, you know, reasonable now, but in 1994, the asparagus was $12.50.
Wow.
And the spinach was also $9.75, which I think that's hilarious. I also found a review, the same review that talked about Peter Luger in the 85 also mentioned this place. And they also said that it's like an old steakhouse where the food really sucks. And the only people that are in there are people that have just been going there for so long and now they're so old they can't taste anything.
Does she not talk about Keen's at all?
No, she doesn't, but I'll talk about that in a minute, okay?
Oh, okay. Great.
Spoiler alert.
Whoa.
Then she talks about Post House, which
is that in Chelsea?
Was on the Upper East Side, 63rd. It's now closed. She describes it as a polite Upper East Side steakhouse. You need an Ivy League degree even to enter. The service seems deliberately slow, which really annoyed her.
Sure.
And she was also pissed off that they ordered a medium rare and a black and blue steak, and there was no visible difference between the two cooking styles. However, they have excellent hash browns.
Oh, well, hey.
But they don't anymore because they're closed.
R.I.P.
And the final place, I skipped some on here if you guys come across the article. It's really thorough. But she talks about Frank's. Are you familiar with Frank's?
No, I mean, I know a couple of other places called Frank's, but not Frank's Steakhouse.
Yeah, so they closed in 2007. So they've been gone for a long time. So I couldn't even figure out exactly where they had been located.
Okay.
They opened in 1912. That's kind of like where it seems like she spends a lot of her time. She loves Frank's and she loves the Palm and she just thinks everything there is great. She never gets dessert at these places, which is fine. Finally, yes, I was surprised that she didn't mention Keen's. So I went back to look and see if she just had mentioned it in a separate article, but Ruth Reichel has never reviewed Keen's as far as I can tell. And there's very little mention of Keen's in the New York Times, period.
Maybe there's a food.
But there, Frank Bruni wrote a review in 2005 in the New York Times. But what's funny is I have a subscription to the New York Times, the failing New York Times.
The failing New York Times, of course.
So basically, I'm not logged in on my computer. So I found the article by Frank Bruni. Couldn't log in on my computer because I can't remember my password, right? Mm-hmm. I go to my New York Times app where I am always logged in. And I searched the exact same article and I can't find it. So I think it's a conspiracy.
Amazing. Well, I am going to give my own review for Keen's and saying that Keen's is one of my favorite restaurants in all of New York City. It's pure class. It's super fun. And it's very warm and nice. And the service is nice. And even if you just are in the area, you know, when you're normally hanging out on 38th Street and 5th Avenue. Just pop in there. If you pop in early, you can go sit at the bar and like they'll give you crudité. If you guess the trivia questions they have of the day, they give you a free drink. It's just like
it's nice fun place to go during lunch and see the dudes who go in there for martini lunches.
Absolutely. And they are the same people every day because an ex-boyfriend of mine actually used to bartend there. And apparently it's the same exact people who go in for lunch every day.
Yeah. Great place. And I don't even like steak, but they have a good burger too. I will say a word of warning. If you get the Mrs. Keene's, which of course is a bad name for a skinny burger, basically.
Yeah.
Or whatever it's called.
It's called the chick burger.
Yeah. It comes with like shoestring fries, but they're not fries. They're like potato chips. And I was so upset when I found this out, and I still haven't recovered. And this was like 3 years ago during Angela's birthday party.
It is very upsetting. Always ask for the crudité because they'll give you free crudité at the bar, but you have to ask for it. And it's like the best crudité platter in all of New York City.
It's free? I didn't know that. I've never had that there.
You can ask for it at the bar and they give it to you at dinner when you sit down at your table.
Aww.
And I think the real star of the show at Keene's, and many people know this already though, is the mutton chop. I think it's far superior to any of their steaks.
And maybe that's why Ruth didn't review them.
Yeah. I mean, they have, again, if you want, like, if you're listening to this and you're from out of town, like, and you want, if someone was to ask me, I have 3 nights in New York City, what should I do? Where should I go? One of my recommendations would be to have dinner at Keene's for sure. 100%. Or at least have a drink at the bar and crudité and then go to like Chinatown and have dinner. But Keene's is a wonderful place. It's a great vibe. It's super historic. And it's one of those places also where like every seat in the house is a good seat.
They've also been operating continuously since like the 1800s. Yeah. They closed down briefly in 1979.
Yeah.
But they've opened back up.
It's like the oldest restaurant in New York. And they even do their own, they have like a whole floor because they own that whole building. They have a floor where they like do their own laundry there. There's like a laundry facility in Keene's. Like they don't send their laundry away, which is just fucking mind blowing to me.
In New York, yeah. Here in Indiana, though, we do our own laundry.
You launder your own linens. Interesting. Well, I loved that story. And I can't wait to hear more about, what is it? The beefsteaks?
Yeah, the beefsteaks.
I'm going to go ahead and look that up. And I might even beefsteak myself one of these days because who cares? No one's watching. And that's one of the pleasantries of being single is to eat
beefsteak like no one is watching.
And eat steak with your feet like no one is watching. All right, guys. Well, let's take a quick break and we will be back with the next part of this titillating episode.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. You may have noticed that we have a whole new look. We also launched a new website that's going to make your listening easier and more enjoyable than ever before. HRN is the original food podcast network. And as we enter a new chapter in our 12-year history, I want to ask you to invest in HRN for the long haul. If you rely on this show to fuel your food media diet, become a monthly sustaining member today. Our members keep the voice of America's food movement alive and kicking. Your donations support this podcast along with 40 other shows on Heritage Radio Network. Your contribution helps give HRN the security we need to stay on the airwaves throughout the pandemic. And your continued support is allowing us to reopen our studio. Plus, we like to give our regular members special treatment. So sign up to become a monthly donor and get access to our secret menu. We've gathered together exclusive discounts and offers from some of your favorite food and beverage brands. So you get to enjoy insider pricing on goods that will ship right to your door. Join our community of monthly donors, and special deals will come your way throughout the summer. So, can you make a gift of $5 or $10 a month? It'll show me and our whole team at HRN how much this podcast and food radio in general means to you. Become a monthly sustaining member today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
So, that commercial break was actually a huge tease because this is going to be a 2-part episode and maybe even 4 parts because I have a lot more to say on the topic of old school restaurants and funky.
It could be, you know, a 10-part series.
Sure. Nobody's listening and nobody cares.
You know, if we do one steakhouse for every state, it could be a 50-part series.
Oh my God. A 50-part series on steaks, which we don't even like.
for a whole year, we're going to be talking about steak, our least favorite food.
It's like that movie, Live, Laugh, Love. Oh, Eat, Pray, Love. In which she spent an entire year soul searching and traveling. But instead, two people who don't really like steak talk about it for an entire year.
But doesn't that make us more of an expert, Zara?
It kind of does. I will tell you one thing about steak that I fucking love is motherfucking A1 sauce. It is so delicious.
Oh, also, so we got the steak at St. Elmo, which was, what was it called?
I don't know, it came with a rubber boot. It was not very good.
But it came with hollandaise and lobster.
It came with hollandaise and crab. And some crab, that's right. It was fine.
But I just think whatever it's called.
Oh, so it was Oscar style.
Oscar, because I told a bunch of people that I had gone there. And I was like, we got the steak with like the crab. And they're like, Oscar. Everyone knew that it was Oscar style, I thought was pretty funny.
It's a thing. We did that at Brucey one year when we did like an old school steakhouse, kind of 60s steakhouse menu for New Year's Eve.
I think I worked there because you had Oysters Rockefeller, right?
Yeah, we did. And we did the steaks Haji style with crab meat and something else. It wasn't asparagus, but for our friend Haji who worked there.
That was a fun night.
It was a fun night, had by all. But anyway, folks, this is a cliffhanger. Who was in that movie Cliffhanger? Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, go ahead and watch that. And by the time you're done, it'll be next week. And we will have part deux of this steakisode.
Yeah.
Hasta la pasta.
Bye. Hey, guys. Zara and I love bringing you random pieces of information each week on the HRN community. And basically what that means is we're not doing this just from the comfort of our own. We are doing this from the comfort of our own homes, but we're not doing any of the work to make this come out to you. HRN is actually supporting us, putting us on the air, giving us engineers to fix all of our mistakes. And so they actually are listener supported. And so we're asking if you feel you can spare it. They are asking for people, they're doing a drive for membership. If you could spare even $1 each month to keep our show on the air, that would be really great for us because otherwise I don't know what we would do with our Tuesday evenings.
Absolutely. And there's only so many episodes of Murder, She Wrote that we can possibly rewatch. Nicole, I'm going to take it from here. You've done a great job. And I just want to reiterate your sentiments that we love bringing you the rip from the headlines content. We love talking to you about the history of corn and also why John Waters is relevant in food culture. And we can't do that without your precious dollars. So please, if you care, give us your money. Show us the money. That is a Jerry Maguire reference. Mm-hmm. So you guys can go ahead over to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and become a member. And you can specifically donate to this show. And we'd appreciate that. And we love you. And HRN loves you. And this is an important community because it really is bringing some really necessary stories from the food world to you. And each week when we bring you our Blazing Lava Hot Ben Affleck content, you know, there's people who are working hard to make that happen and make that possible. And we need to help them, help you, help me, help you. That's Jerry Maguire reference number two.
So I just think of it this way. I would say,
go ahead, Nicole.
If you don't donate to us, Ben Affleck will stop being famous because we're the only people that are speaking about him and we need to keep him in the news. Okay.
Exactly. Okay. So head over again. HeritageRadioNetwork.org/donate to become a member. And please support Heritage Radio Network and its quest to bring you all things food. And we love you so much. And of course, as always, hasta la pasta.
Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.